Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Thank you, Tom, and hello, listeners. We're so glad you joined us at the river today. We have a great program planned for you, don't we, Maxine?
We do, and I'm really excited with our guests today and our topic because it's a topic that very seldom is talked about.
It's seldom talked about, and yet I think so many people are touched by it, don't you? And especially in our society.
I totally do. I totally think so.
Well, we have Denise Schick, who's the Director of Help for Families, and that's an outreach that brings understanding of the emotional pain and spiritual confusion that people face when a loved one has gender identity confusion. She's the author of My Daddy's Secret. She leads a church-based support group for people with sexual addiction and was the administrator of family-related issues with Transgender International Fellowship. Denise has worked in crisis pregnancy counseling, a substance abuse clinic, and started an abstinence program. My goodness, Denise. Denise and her husband, Mark, have four adult children. Goodness, you're a busy lady, Denise. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.
Well, Denise, we were talking before the show, and you were telling us that you didn't like to read as a child, and yet you've written two books. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'm more of a mover type of a person. So to me, you had to sit to read a book, and it just isn't part of my personality. So I kind of chuckle, you know, now with writing a couple books and just the stillness that the Lord has had to teach me with being in this type of ministry because of the study and in the reading that it's involved in.
So how did you happen to write a book like this, which is not only a book or both of these books, they're sort of difficult books? How did you happen to get started writing them?
Well, actually, a friend out of the area had asked me to think about writing a book, and I laughed at her and said, maybe when I'm 65 and I don't have anything else to do. The Lord was the one that had the laugh because she just said, would you please, you know, just call this gentleman, call the editor that she knew, Jerry Gramko, and see what the Lord does from there. And so Jerry and I just did a sample of one, two chapters, and it was like, wow, you know, I started to have a vision for what the Lord wanted to do at that time, and Jerry was a very supportive editor and helping me in the progress. So he, of course, was the same editor that I went to with our second book, When Hope Seems Lost.
Well, what qualifies you to write on this topic?
Personally, my father had told me at the age of 9 that he wanted to become a woman. And with My Daddy's Secret, it's really about my personal story and the struggles that I had endured while bringing an understanding of how my father struggled with this issue and what I had learned about our family. So it was really just personal experiences. And being able to put it down on paper, and that's the hardest part, is trying to think, can I share this? Because once you let something out, you can't take it back.
So
that was so difficult in that. And with When Hope Seems Lost, I just had a vision for this book after our first conference in Kentucky, as people were saying, is this the only Christian book out there on this topic that they've looked and looked? And so I was hearing the need of the people And of course, hope is what we all need when any type of disastrous or devastating situation happens in our life. And so I was very blessed and honored as I shared my vision with several individuals who as well had wrote a chapter in this book to make this vision come to what it is. And I think that's what makes it so special. We have writers from the UK to across the US that participated in this. So it's very special to me personally.
How did you find those writers? This is an unusual topic for Christians to write on, as you said. So how did you find those people?
Well, two of the individuals have ministries in the UK that we've worked alongside of and teamed up for several years. And some of the writers here in the U.S. Were individuals that helped me with our Hope Gathering that we had in 2010. So I already was gaining a personal and professional relationship with them, and I knew of their abilities to express in this book. And then several other ones are those that were just willing to open up about where they were in their journey before Christ, but where they are today because of Christ.
Okay, that's exciting. Where are some of them today because of Christ?
Well, some of them have changed their lives just wondrously, as some of the individuals in there share about their struggle with gender identity confusion. And because of their trust in Christ and their relationship that kept being worked on, and some of them needed some counseling, but they were faced and they were willing to face the issues in their life and those root issues. And so it was just a building up of them and a strength, you know, that Christ had given them to face those difficult times. And because of their trust in Jesus, where he had taken them through, and it's just so, to me, just wonderfully expressed, you know, in these chapters, is they're so bold and so full of courage to open up about something so personal as struggling with this issue. And then we have parents that have shared, you know, though they are in the midst of this, they are not going to allow their faith to alter. And it doesn't mean that they have to choose between their faith or their loved one. They can continue in their faith and their relationship with Christ as they continue to love their loved one in this.
Yeah, this is just such a deep subject, and there's so much to consider here, because there is the parents who give birth to a boy or girl, consider themselves the parent of a son or a daughter, and then when that child grows older and tells them that's not who he or she feels they are, then it's the acceptance of how do I see my child as somebody different than how I've seen them their whole life. And I think of Sonny and Cher's daughter, Chastity, and how she chose to become Chaz over the last few years. And that's one situation that's in the spotlight. I mean, even on the Dancing with the Stars program, they brought her as him into that scene. But how does a parent let go of their concept of who their child is? What do we tell the people out there right now?
I don't think the parents need to let go of that child that they knew as that they knew and know as their son and daughter. You know, it is by within that grieving process that they go through that is so devastating and so difficult for them. But they are still that son or daughter, no matter what identity they may take on. And so that is so important to be speaking truth to their loved one. You know, my father went from Harold to Becky, and even though I was just a young adult by the time he transitioned, I thought, I can't call him Becky or the pronouns, because to me, I would be deceiving him. I would be walking away from the truth, which would cause him to believe this deceivement all the more. And so it's very, I never stopped loving them, you know, and it's very important that we don't stop loving them. We just need to come alongside of them, understand the issue, become educated about it, you know, have a support system for themselves. The parents need to have a support system. If it's ministerial support, if it's family or close friend support, somebody that will be able to pray with them on this and to, you know, personalize it by understanding the issue itself and to really become partners by understanding it of how can we come alongside of our loved one. The unfortunate situation is sometimes not always is the loved one willing, you know, to go along with the parents that will deny calling their son by the female name that they've taken on. But those are healthy boundaries that the parents must decide for their home, how they will relate to this. Because what happens so often is if a parent, what I hear is through the child saying, this is who I am, this is who I am, and, you know, for instance, a son saying to their mother, please call me Lynn from now on, in the female meaning of it. And I've heard from others that have done this, and then down the road, the regret that they have because they see the consequences that had come from that, because the child had started to feel accepted in this identity, you know, for one thing.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the causes to consider when it comes to gender identity disorder?
And I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'd like to hear some of the causes because I think people are so confused on this. And if there are some causes to look at and then resolve first before, you know, the process follows through any further, maybe some emotional help can be brought to bear that changes the outcome.
Right. They may not feel loved or accepted by their same-sex parent. For instance, my father never felt like he could level up to my grandfather's expectations. And that is something that's common. They perceive that life would be better or easier as the opposite gender, especially if they notice the opposite gender receiving the hugs and the love that they themselves, you know, have not received and that they're needing of. They may start to cross-dress at an early age, feel uncomfortable with the peers of their same sex. They don't feel accepted by the peers of the same sex. And so all of these, you know, someone who may feel weak in their born gender, and sometimes we forget with all these simplified definitions or meanings of what could bring this is in regards to there's also obsessive-compulsive disorder that different individuals that contact us, you know, admit to having, symbolic confusion. And so there's personality disorder. So there are other psychological, you know, issues that could be underlining this in their life.
Ooh, wow, it's such a serious subject. So how did you, as a young girl, process this? Did you continue to call Harold Dad? What did you do? Did your family stay together? What happened?
I did continue to call my father Dad. Our family was together till I was 28 when he had left our family to pursue this life. But during that time, from the age of 9 until I was actually 16, I never shared with anybody because of the shame that I felt. The embarrassment and, you know, afraid of being rejected by my peers or by people in the neighborhood if they knew what my father struggled with or indeed, you know, what he was doing with my own clothing and the different trouble that this had brought between he and I in our relationship. So I stayed in the closet, in a sense, you know, and many of us do because somebody doesn't understand. And, of course, trusting somebody is such a huge, big step for us to take. But even as a child, I thought this is not right. You know, this obviously I was not conceived from two women. Even at the age of 9, I understood that. And so as I never accepted the female identity that he struggled with and when he was cross-dressing in the home. When he had left to pursue this life, I continued to call him Dad and, you know, referred by the pronouns. And really the last time that I had seen him when he left was I begged him, you know, to please get help, that we would find some Christian support, ministerial counseling. But by that point, he was so sucked into this because of his own emotional distress that he couldn't see any way out. So that's kind of, you know, how it had gone. And then 13 years had passed by that I did not see him, and I did not communicate with him after a certain length of time because it was very obvious to me that he was trying to get me to accept this. And emotionally and spiritually where I was, I just needed to take care of myself because I was married and raising four small children.
That brings up a lot of different issues, doesn't it, when you're raising your own family and grandpa now wants to be of the other gender.
Yeah.
I mean, that can be very confusing for children. So
it
what,
can.
Could you explain that a little bit? Yeah, and then tell what the churches can do to help with something like that.
Mm-hmm. It is very hard when you've got children, because I know myself going through this. By the time, you know, I was 10, 11 years old and started, I matured early. And so I started to question, well, if Dad was really supposed to be a woman, then how do you know you're not supposed to be a man? And taking that to the way of playing it out in my mind, what would I look like? You know, suit, tie, how would I walk? What would that mean for a relationship? And trying to actually visualize myself kissing another girl and wondering, wait a minute, does this mean I'm gay? You know, so all of those questions of sexuality and my own gender had come into play. So I was very concerned for our own children knowing this. And the churches themselves, if first of all, you know that they love them where they are at, because they need to reach them. If an individual comes into the church office and has the courage to share with the minister what he is struggling with, that is such a huge step. And what they need is somebody to love them, to walk alongside of them. If they say, we will stand before you, you know, we will mentor you, we will help you in this way, you know, please keep your word. Please, you know, help this person that has had the courage. And usually there is so much hurt and pain because of the rejection that they have felt somewhere along in their life that they truly are seeking Christ. That's what we should be doing, you know, as Christians, walking alongside of them as Jesus would.
Excellent advice. I know myself, coming from a divorce background years and years ago, the church has a way of throwing away the wounded soul sometimes. And so what you're saying is really powerful. Jeannie, are you back on the line with us? Because I think somewhere along the line you got dropped. And I think I found
was dropped. I don't know if I've been back on or not. I've been talking occasionally.
Well,
I just
went to the studio and saw your mic was somehow turned off, so you got dropped somewhere. And you're back on
I've
now.
Been dropped most of the time.
Oh,
I'm
hallelujah.
So sorry. I've been listening. I've been listening, though, to a lot of it.
You're
so
just
I'm
too quiet.
No, it just can't be Jeannie. Hey, Denise, you said something that I'm just dying to hear a little bit more about that, and that is that you refused to call your father Becky and you called him Dad, and then you spoke about the trouble that other people had with their children when they wouldn't call them by the name that they wanted. How did your father treat you? Was it a threatening thing? Was it a feeling of rejection, him to you? How did he treat you when you kept that stance of calling him your father?
I was really fortunate because by the time the 13 years had gone by and I'm, you know, facing him as an adult, as he had stomach esophagus cancer. So I had six months that the Lord had given me to really come alongside and to forgive my father and to meet my dad where he was and to gain a better understanding as an adult. But he did not. You know, I would defy the nurses, and I know they're only doing legally, you know, what they're
sure.
told to do by rules and regulations, but they would come in here and say he or she, and I'd say, you mean him or my dad. I just felt like this environment kept, you know, sucking him up into this delusion, and that just was such a strong thing that I needed to do. Not just for me, but for my father, because I'm trying to bring him into reality.
And did you ever do that?
I never called him Becky, she, he, never.
No, I mean, did you ever feel that he returned to reality?
I don't believe that he had.
Okay.
Because, you know, those months in the hospital, though there were tears that were shared and, you know, so much pain that was shared. He had gone so far into this that I don't believe, but I don't know that. And I keep telling Christ, you know, I've got to leave it with God and only to hope, you know, that through the visits and through the conversations that my father at some point, well, as he was facing reality as being a grandfather and missing out on the years of seeing his grandchildren, and that was at one point where the tears come running down his cheeks.
Oh, bless his heart. And I think it took such courage for you to handle it the way you did, and I think it's going to take a lot of courage for relatives of other gender identity disorder people to handle it with the same way you did, with the same wisdom. Hey, you talk about a study done by John Hopkins University. Did you guys talk about that when I was gone?
No, I don't think
Would
so.
You? Would you please? Because I'd like to know what they concluded. Yeah.
Sure. They had concluded that while the surgeries had given the people what they wanted, the medical professionals had really been distracted from discovering the real natures of gender identity confusion. You know, they had gone along with it instead of continuing with research and seeking a cure and ways to prevent it. They discovered that even though people had had the surgeries and they had hoped that it would help them flourish on the inside, it did not do so. You know, their outside had changed, but what was going on inside still needed to be dealt with. It didn't fix it. And that's so important because we do cosmetic surgery, you know, for whatever reasons that us women, some of them, you know, will do. And we're very vanity about what we look like and such. But it's so devastating when we get calls from individuals that have done this. And you're just talking where they call in it 6 months later, you know, and reality sits in, and the devastation. And that's where I think we need to call for our professionals and our political people to be responsible for the lives and what is being done, the harm that is coming.
Political correctness is such an evil in our society, isn't it?
Yes.
It's just politically correct not to say anything, and it doesn't take into account the individual. It's being really, in a way, selfish, I think, when people just try to do what's politically correct instead of what's right. Yeah.
Denise,
and it's usually not good for the family.
No.
No kidding. Yeah. Would you tell people how to get a hold of you and mention your book's titles again and describe your website a little bit, because you've got a tremendous amount of tabs in here that help individuals.
Our website is helpforfamilies.com, and that's with the number 4. And we have a lot of different research, as you said, in there. There's some medical. There's a little bit of something to meet everybody, if they're the individual, if it's the family member, testimonies of those that have struggled with this and that are now saying, you know, look where I am today, or look what God has done through my life. We also offer online support groups, and we have started doing phone consultations phone
court.
Actually, conference calls, there's the word, once a month, that's been for moms around the world. You know, it doesn't matter where the moms are. The first Sunday of every month, we've got a time schedule so that they are able to connect, and it's so awesome when we've got moms from California, from Texas to Kentucky, to Canada, you know, where they're able to connect and to share their pain in a safe place, but as well to know that their children are being prayed for. And currently in November, we started a conference call for those that struggle with this issue, and they are now moving it into more of a computer Google hang-up that I have to learn. So we have a tremendous, wonderful gentleman, you know, that's leading that, and they're all trustworthy people. So we were hoping, you know, in regards to the churches, there's information there. It was just meant to be a resource that whoever you may be, you will feel connected and you will find truthful and biblical stands on this issue while we are loving everyone involved. And our books are, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
My Daddy's Secret, and the second one is When Hope Seems Lost.
And you know, are those available on Kindle as well as paperback?
No, they are not, unfortunately.
Okay.
You know,
they are available through Amazon and through our websites and as well through Zulon Books.
You know, there are a lot of people who are going to say that this stance that you take is a hateful stance, that you don't care about those people. I'd like you to answer that. And then I'd also like to ask you, do you really believe that it's possible for people troubled in this way to change?
Yeah, I don't hate anybody. You know, they're actually probably more of the anger and hatefulness is what I receive from individuals. I've been involved in some testimonials with Senate and hearings, in-house hearings, and I get called, you know, selfish daughter, self-centered, and will bleep out, you know, other names and such. You know, I'm just coming alongside. I'm sharing my story. I'm sharing what I have learned, what the Lord has allowed me to learn through others. And by coming alongside and standing biblically to love those as Christ desires us to do so, you know, we can agree to disagree, but that doesn't mean that there has to be any hate in there.
Denise, before we run out of time, could you tell us a little bit about Hope Gathering if we've got listeners that would like to attend that?
Mm-hmm. We're having Hope Gathering in Atlanta, Georgia, July 28th. And with that, we have Dr. Mark Dilworth, who specializes in children and adolescents with gender identity confusion. And we'll have personal testimonies and some other speakers as well. And it's just meant to be a one-day conference where people can be encouraged, where they are learning truthful information and where meaningful relationships of others that have either walked through this will be there, or the families that are looking to connect with other families so they're not feeling like they are alone in this.
You know, Denise, we're starting to run out of time. So is there one thing that you would like listeners to take away from this program today that we haven't mentioned?
Just please love those that are going through this and come alongside, try to understand it and love their family members, because this is very painful, very difficult. And Satan is so clever into one thing of our identity that can destroy the individual and destroy the family.
Hmm. Maxine, would you like to say a little something about this?
You know, I appreciate Denise and what she has brought forward into our program today, because we want the river to cover some of these difficult subjects, and you have done it, Denise, in a beautiful way with dignity and honor to all the individuals concerned, because when something like this happens, we've got to remember everybody is hurting that is surrounding the person, not just the person who is trapped not knowing his identity or her identity, but the wife is hurting, the mothers and fathers are hurting, the siblings are hurting. There's just people in an extended family way that I appreciate the fact that she's brought forth the grieving that has to happen from all different directions, but then the acceptance that has to somehow come into place. And Denise, thank you for bringing that forward.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate you
so much today.
What I like the best about all this, Denise, is the really loving way, just like Maxine was saying, that you respond not only to the relatives of these people, but to the people themselves that are suffering in this way. And I love the way you love them like God does. God doesn't hate them or look down on them or think they're worse than anybody else. God loves them. They're his children. And I am so grateful for that. And listeners, we just hope that you will pass the word about this show to people that you know, so that they have a healthy way of dealing and a constructive way of dealing with this problem if they know anybody with issues. So thank you for joining us on the river today, and we'll see you this time next week.
Thank you, Denise.
Thank you so much. God bless.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.